The Wars of the Roses have been raging for 50 years. At the Battle of Tewkesbury, the Yorkists have murdered the Prince of Wales and routed the Lancastrian armies. Leaving the field, Richard, Duke of Gloucester, has sped to London and killed Henry VI in the Tower. Now his brother Edward IV is the undisputed King of England. Following the years of horror and bloodshed, he endeavours to set the country on the road to peace, but there are too many bitter scars. Most of his nobles deeply resent the favours which he has bestowed upon his wife Elizabeth's family and relatives, and his brother Richard deliberately aggravates the situation to foster his own daring attempt to seize the crown. Having already dispatched Henry VI, he has turned his attentions to his brother Clarence, whom he has persuaded the king to imprison in the Tower. There he is drowned by two thugs hired by Richard, and when the king falls gravely ill, Richard knows he has to act swiftly if he is to become his brother's successor. But the king, in a last desperate effort to heal the rifts in his realm and thereby protect his young sons, the little princes Edward and Richard, has summoned all his nobles to his bedside, and here he orders them to swear they will immediately forsake all their personal feudings.
To God, 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 You peers, continue this United League. I every day expect an embassage from my Redeemer to redeem me hence. And more in peace my soul shall part to heaven, since I have made my friends at peace on earth. There wanteth now our brother Gloucester here to make the blessed period of this peace.
And in good time here comes the noble Duke.
Good morrow to my sovereign king and queen, and princely peers, a happy time of day.
Happy indeed as we have spent the day. Gloucester, we have done deeds of charity, made peace of enmity, fair love of hate, between these swelling, wrong-incensed peers.
A blessed labor, my most sovereign lord. Among this princely heap, if any here by false intelligence or wrong surmise hold me a foe, if I unwittingly or in my rage have aught committed that is hardly borne by any in this presence, I desire to reconcile me to his friendly peace. 'Tis death to me to be at enmity. I hate it, and do desire all good men's love. First, madam, I entreat true peace of you, which I will purchase with my duteous service. Of you, my noble cousin Buckingham, if ever any grudge were lodged between us, of you and you, Lord Rivers and of Hastings, dukes, earls, lords, gentlemen, indeed of all. I do not know that Englishman alive with whom my soul is any jot at odds, more than the infant that is born tonight. I thank my God for my humility.
A holy day shall this be kept hereafter. I would to God all strifes were well compounded. My sovereign lord, I do beseech your highness to take our brother Clarence to your grace.
Why, madam, have I offered love for this, to be so flouted in this royal presence? Who knows not that the gentle duke is dead?
Who knows not he is dead? Who knows he is?
King heaven, what a world is this?
Is Clarence dead? The order was reversed.
But he, poor man, by your first order died, and that our winged Mercury did bear. Some tardy cripple bore the countermand that came too late to see him buried.
Have I a tongue to doom my brother's death? My brother killed no man. His fault was thought, and yet his punishment was bitter death. Who sued to me for him? Who, in my wrath, kneeled at my feet and bid me be advised? Who spoke of brotherhood? Who spoke of love? Who told me how the poor soul did forsake the mighty Warwick and did fight for me? Who told me in the field at Tewkesbury, when Oxford had me down, he rescued me and said, "Dear brother, live and be a king." All this from my remembrance, brutish wrath sinfully plucked. And not a man of you had so much grace to put it in my mind. But when your carters or your waiting vassals have done a drunken slaughter and defaced the precious image of our dear Redeemer, You traitor, on your knees for pardon. Pardon. But for my brother, not a man would speak. Nor I, ungracious, speak unto myself for him, poor soul. The proudest of you all have been beholding to him in his life, yet none of you would once beg for his life. Oh, God! I fear thy justice will take hold on me and you and mine and yours, Fathers. Come, Hastings, help me to my closet. Ah, poor Clarence!
My lord. My lord.
Ah, Buckingham, this is the fruits of rashness. Marked you not how that the guilty kindred of the Queen looked pale when they did hear of Clarence's death? Aye. Oh, they did urge it still unto the King. God will revenge it. My lord, will you go to comfort Edward with your company?
I wait upon your grace.
Hark! What cry is this?
Thy prince, our king, is dead.
Amen, amen.
Oh, comfort, dear mother. God is much displeased that you take with unthankfulness his doing. In common worldly things, 'tis called ungrateful, with dull unwillingness to repay a debt which with a bounteous hand was kindly lent. Much more to be thus opposite with heaven, for it requires the royal debt it lent you.
Madam, bethink you like a careful mother of your son, Prince Edward. Send straight for him. Let him be crowned. In him your comfort lives. Drown desperate sorrow in dead Edward's grave, and plant your joys in living Edward's throne.
Sister, have comfort. All of us have cause to wail the dimming of our shining star, but none can help our harms by wailing them.
You cloudy princes and heart-sorrowing peers that bear this heavy mutual load of moan, now cheer each other in each other's love. Though we have spent our harvest of this king, we are to reap the harvest of his son. Meseemeth good that with some little train forthwith from Ludlow the young prince be fetched hither to London to be crowned our king.
Why with some little train, my lord of Buckingham?
Marry, my lord, lest by a multitude the new healed wound of malice should break out, which would be so much the more dangerous by how much the estate is green and yet ungoverned. Where every horse bears his commanding rein and may direct his course as please himself, as well the fear of harm as harm apparent, in my opinion, ought to be prevented.
I hope the king made peace with all of us, and the compact is true and firm in me.
And so in me, and so I think in all. Yet, since it is but green, it should be put to no apparent likelihood of a breach, which haply by much company might be urged. Therefore I say, with noble Buckingham, that it is meet so few should fetch the prince.
Hastings?
And I.
Then be it so, and go we to determine who they shall be that straight shall post to Ludlow. Madam, you and my cousins, will you go to give your censures in this business?
With all my heart.
Come on.
My lord, whoever journeys to the prince, for God's sake let not us two stay at home. For by the way, I'll sort occasion to part the queen's proud kindred from the prince.
My other self. My counsel's consistory, my oracle, my prophet, my dear cousin. I, as a child, will go by thy direction. Toward Ludlow, then, for we'll not stay behind.
As Richard and Buckingham ride to Ludlow to accompany the young king, Edward V, to London, his brother, Richard of York, is in a room in Westminster Hall with his mother and grandmother, the Duchess of York. Although they're extremely worried about Richard and Buckingham's intentions towards them, they, together with the Archbishop of York, eagerly discuss the young king's imminent arrival.
I long with all my heart to see the prince.
Tomorrow or the next day, he'll be here.
I hope he's much grown since last I saw him.
I hear no. They say my son of York here has almost attained him in his growth.
Aye, mother, but I would not have it so.
Why, my good cousin, it is good to grow.
Grandam, one night as we did sit at supper, my uncle Rivers talked how I did grow more than my brother. I, quoth my uncle Gloucester, small herbs have grace. Great weeds do grow apace. And since, methinks, I would not grow so fast, because sweet flowers are slow and weeds make haste.
Oh, good faith, good faith. The saying did not hold in him that did object the same to thee. He was the wretchedest thing when he was young, so long a growing and so leisurely, that if his rule were true, he should be virtuous.
So no doubt he is, my gracious madam.
I hope he is. But yet let mothers doubt.
Marry, they say my uncle grew so fast that he could gnaw a crust at 2 hours old. 'Twas full 2 years ere I could get a tooth. Grandam, this would have been a biting jest.
I prithee, pretty boy, who told thee this?
Grandam, his nurse.
His nurse? Why, she was dead ere thou wast born.
If 'twere not she, I cannot tell who told me.
Parlous boy, go to, you are too shrewd.
Good madam, be not angry with the child.
Here comes a messenger. What news?
Such news, your grace, has grieves me to report.
How doth my son?
Well, madam, and in health.
What is thy news?
Lord Rivers and Lord Grey are sent to Pumfret, prisoners.
Oh! Who hath committed them?
The mighty dukes, Gloucester and Buckingham.
For what offence?
Why or for what the nobles were committed is all unknown to me, my gracious lord.
Ay me, I see the ruin of my house. The tiger now hath seized the gentle hind. Insulting tyranny begins to jut upon the innocent and aweless throne. Welcome destruction, blood, and massacre. I see as in a map the end of all.
Accursed and unquiet wrangling days. How many of you have mine eyes beheld? My husband lost his life to get the crown, and often up and down my sons were tossed for me to joy and weep their gain and loss. And being seated and domestic broils clean overblown, themselves the conquerors, make war upon themselves, brother to brother, blood to blood, self against self. Oh, preposterous and frantic outrage, end thy damned spleen. Or let me die to look on death no more.
Come, come, my son. We will to sanctuary. Madam, farewell.
Stay, I will go with you.
Oh, you have no cause.
My gracious lady, go, and thither bear your treasure and your goods. For my part, I resign unto your grace the seal I keep, and so betide to me, as well I tender you and all of yours. Go, I'll conduct you to the sanctuary.
Welcome, sweet prince, to London, to your chamber.
I want more uncles here to welcome me.
Sweet prince, the untainted virtue of your years hath not yet dived into the world's deceit. Nor more can you distinguish of a man than of his outward show, which God, he knows, seldom or never jumpeth with the heart. Those uncles which you want were dangerous. Your grace attended to their sugared words, but looked not on the poison of their hearts. God keep you from them, and from such false friends.
God keep me from false friends, but they were none. I thought my mother and my brother York would long ere this have met us on the way. Fie, what a slug is Hastings that he comes not to tell us whether they will come or no.
And in good time, here comes the sweating lord.
Welcome, my lord. What will our mother come?
On what occasion, God, he knows, not I. The queen, your mother, and your brother, York, have taken sanctuary. The tender prince would fain have come with me to meet your grace, but by his mother was perforce withheld.
Fie, what an indirect and peevish course is this of hers. Bishop Ely, will your grace persuade the queen to send the Duke of York unto his princely brother presently? If she deny, Lord Hastings, go with him, and from her jealous arms pluck him perforce.
My lord of Buckingham, if my weak oratory can from his mother win the Duke of York, anon expect him here. But if she be obdurate to mild entreaties, God in heaven forbid we should infringe the holy privilege of blessed sanctuary. Not for all this land would I be guilty of so deep a sin.
You are too senseless, obstinate, my lord, too ceremonious and traditional. You break not sanctuary in seizing him. The benefit thereof is always granted to those whose dealings have deserved the place and those who have the wit to claim the place. This prince has neither claimed it nor deserved it, and therefore, in mine opinion, cannot have it. Then, taking him from thence that is not there, you break no privilege nor charter there. After have I heard of sanctuary men, but sanctuary children there till now.
My lord, you shall o'errule my mind for once. Ah. Come on, Lord Hastings, will you go with me?
I go, my lord.
Good lord.
My liege.
Make all the speedy haste you may.
My liege.
Say, Uncle Gloucester, if our brother come, where shall we sojourn till our coronation?
Where it seems best unto your royal self. If I may counsel you, some day or two your highness shall repose you at the Tower. Then where you please, and shall be thought most fit for your best health and recreation.
I do not like the Tower of any place.
So why so young, they say, do ne'er live long?
Did Julius Caesar build that place, my lord?
He did, my gracious lord, begin that place, which since succeeding ages have re-edified.
That Julius Caesar was a famous man. With what his valour did enrich his wit set down to make his valour live. Death makes no conquest of this conqueror, for now he lives in fame, though not in life. I'll tell you what, my cousin Buckingham.
Pardon, my gracious lord.
And if I live until I be a man, I'll win our ancient right in France again, or die a soldier as I lived a king.
A short summer's likely have a forward spring.
Now, in good time, here comes the Duke of York.
Brother! Richard of York! How fares our loving brother?
Well, my dread lord. So I must call you now.
My brother, to our grief as it is yours. Too late he died that might have kept that title, which by his death hath lost much majesty.
How fares our cousin, noble Lord of York?
I thank you, gentle uncle. Oh, my lord, you said that idle weeds are fast in growth. The prince, my brother, hath outgrown me far.
He hath, my lord.
And therefore, is he idle?
Oh, my fair cousin, I must not say so.
Then he is more beholding to you than I.
He may command me as my sovereign, but you have power in me as in a kinsman.
I pray you, uncle, give me your dagger.
My dagger, little cousin? With all my heart.
A beggar, brother.
Of my kind uncle, that I know will give, and being but a trifle, which is no grief to give.
A greater gift than that I'll give my cousin.
A greater gift? Oh, that's the sword to it.
Aye, gentle cousin, were it light enough.
Oh, then I see you will part but with light gifts. In weightier things you'll say a beggar nay.
It is too heavy for your grace to wear.
I weigh it lightly were it heavier.
What? Would you have my weapon, little lord?
I would, that I might thank you as you call me.
How?
Little.
My Lord of York will still be cross in talk. Uncle, your grace knows how to bear with him.
You mean to bear me, not to bear with me? Uncle, my brother mocks both you and me. Because that I am little, like an ape, he thinks that you should bear me on your shoulder!
With what a sharp, divided, witty reasons. To mitigate the scorn he gives his uncle, he prettily and aptly taunts himself. So cunning and so young is wonderful.
My lord, will it please you pass along? Myself and my good cousin Buckingham will to your mother to entreat of her to meet you at the Tower and welcome you.
What? Will you go into the Tower, my lord?
My lord protector needs will have it so.
I shall not sleep in quiet at the Tower.
Why, what should you fear?
Marry, my uncle Clarence Angry Ghost. My grandam told me he was murdered there.
I fear no uncle's dead.
Nor none that live, I hope.
And if they live, I hope I need not fear. But come, my brother, with a heavy heart, thinking on them, go I unto the Tower.
My Lord of Hastings, see them well bestowed.
My Lord.
Think you, my lord, this little prating York was not incensed by his subtle mother to taunt and scorn you thus opprobriously?
No doubt, no doubt. Oh, 'tis a parlous boy.
Well, let them rest. Come hither, Catesby. Thou art sworn as deeply to effect what we intend as closely to conceal what we impart. What thinkest thou? Is it not an easy matter to make William Lord Hastings of our mind for the installment of this noble duke in the seat royal of this famous isle?
He, for his father's sake, so loves the prince that he will not be one to aught against him.
What thinkst thou then of Derby? What will he?
He will do all in all as Hastings doth?
Well, then, no more but this. Go, gentle Catesby, and as it were far off, sound thou Lord Hastings how he doth stand affected to our purpose. If thou dost find him tractable to us, encourage him, and tell him all our reasons. If he be leaden, icy cold, unwilling, be thou so too. And so break off the talk, and give us notice of his inclination.
Commend me to Lord William. Tell him, Catesby, his ancient knot of dangerous adversaries tomorrow are let blood at Pomfret Castle. And bid him then, for joy of this good news, give Mistress Shaw one gentle kiss the more.
Good Catesby, go effect this business soundly.
My good lords both, with all the heed I can.
Ah, my lord. What shall we do if we perceive Lord Hastings will not yield to our complots?
Chop off his head. Something we will determine. And look, when I am king, claim thou of me the earldom of Hereford and all the movables whereof the king my brother was possessed.
I'll claim that promise at your grace's hand.
And look to have it yielded with all kindness. Come, let us sup betimes, that afterwards we may digest our complots in some form.
While Catesby sets out to discover whether Hastings will support Richard's attempt to seize the crown, the Queen's two relatives, Rivers and Grey, are standing on a windswept scaffold at Pomfret Castle, where they're about to be executed by one of Richard's supporters, Sir Richard Ratcliffe.
Sir Richard Ratcliffe, let me tell thee this. Today shalt thou behold a subject die for truth, for duty, and for loyalty.
God bless the prince from all the pack of you, and not you are of damned bloodsuckers.
Dispatch, the limit of your lives is out.
Oh, Pomfret, Pomfret, oh, thou bloody prison, fatal and ominous to noble peers. Within the guilty closure of thy walls, Richard II here was hacked to death. And for more slander to thy dismal seat, we give to thee our guiltless blood to drink.
Now Margaret's curse is fallen upon our heads when she exclaimed on Hastings, you and I, for standing by when Richard stabbed her son.
Then cursed she Richard. Then cursed she Buckingham. Then cursed she Hastings. Oh, remember God to hear her prayer for them, as now for us. And for my sister and her princely sons, be satisfied, dear God, with our true blood, which, as thou knowest, unjustly must be spilt.
Make haste. The hour of death is expert.
Come, Grey, my dearest friend. Let's here embrace. Farewell. Until we meet again. In heaven.
Grey. Rivers.
Hastings, unaware of the threat to his life, arrives at the tower apparently in order to discuss with other peers of the realm the coronation of young Edward V.
Now, noble peers, the cause why we're met is to determine of the coronation. In God's name, speak. When is the royal day?
Is all things ready for the royal time?
It is, and wants but nomination.
Tomorrow, then, I judge a happy day.
Look, who knows the Lord Protector's mind herein? Who is most inward with the noble Duke?
Lord Hastings, you and he are near in love.
I thank his grace. I know he loves me well. But for his purpose in the coronation, I have not sounded him, nor he delivered his gracious pleasure any way therein. But you, my honourable lords, may name the time, and in the Duke's behalf I'll give my voice, which I presume he'll take in gentle part.
In happy time, here comes the Duke himself.
My noble lords and cousins all, good morrow. I have been long a sleeper, but I trust my absence doth neglect no great design which by my presence might have been concluded.
Had you not come upon your cue, my lord, William Lord Hastings had pronounced your part. I mean your voice for crowning of the king.
Then my Lord Hastings. No man might be bolder. His lordship knows me well and loves me well.
My lord of Ely, when I was last in Holborn, I saw good strawberries in your garden there. And I do beseech you, send for some.
Marry and will, my lord, with all my heart.
Cousin of Buckingham, a word with you.
Praise you,
Catesby hath sounded Hastings in our business, and finds the testy gentleman so hot that he will lose his head ere give consent his master's child, as worshipfully he puts it, shall lose the royalty of England's throne.
Withdraw yourself a while. I'll go with you.
My lord.
We have not yet set down this day of triumph. Tomorrow, in my judgment, is too sudden. For I myself am not so well provided as else I would be were the day prolonged.
Where is my lord, the Duke of Gloucester? I have sent for these strawberries.
His Grace looks cheerfully and smooth this morning. I think there's never a man in Christendom can lesser hide his love or hate than he, for by his face straight shall you know his heart.
I pray you all, tell me what they deserve, that to conspire my death with devilish plots of damned witchcraft, and that have prevailed upon my body with their hellish charms.
The tender love I bear your grace, my lord, makes me most forward in this princely presence to doom the offenders, whosoe'er they be. I say, my lord, they have deserved death.
Then be your eyes the witness of their evil.
Look how I am bewitched! Behold, mine arm is like a blasted sapling withered up, and this is Edward's wife, that monstrous witch, consorted with that harlot strumpet Shaw, that by their witchcraft thus have marked me. If they have done this deed, my noble lord... If! Thou, protector of this damned strumpet, talks thou to me of ifs! Thou art a traitor. Off with his head. Now, by St. Paul, I swear I will not dine until I see the same. Catesby and Ratcliffe, look that it be done. The rest that love me, rise and follow me.
Woe, woe for England. Not a whit for me, for I too fond might have prevented this. 3 times today my footcloth horse did stumble and started when he looked upon the tower, as loath to bear me to the slaughterhouse. Oh, now I need the priest that spake to me. Oh, Margaret, Margaret, now thy heavy curse is lighted on poor Hastings' wretched head.
Come, come, dispatch. The Duke would be at dinner. Make a short shrift. He longs to see your head.
Oh, momentary grace of mortal men, which we more hunt for than the grace of God, who builds his hope in air of your good looks, lives like a drunken sailor on a mast, ready with every nod to tumble down into the fatal bowels of the deep.
Come, come, dispatch. 'Tis bootless to exclaim.
Oh, bloody Richard, miserable England. I prophesy the fearful time to thee that ever wretched age hath looked upon. Come, lead me to the block, bear him my head. They smile at me, who shortly shall be dead.
With Hastings removed, Richard and Buckingham now prepare to make their final bid for the crown. But they know that the London public are generally sympathetic towards the boy, King Edward V. Swiftly they spread rumours that both the little princes are illegitimate and that Edward IV was so sexually insatiable that he could possibly have had many more bastards. But despite all their efforts, Buckingham fails to persuade the citizens to accept Richard as their legitimate king. Now, as the citizens and the Lord Mayor approach, Buckingham rapidly outlines another attack to Richard.
Will not the mayor then and his brethren come?
The mayor is here at hand. Pretend some fear. Be not you spoke with, but by mighty suit. And look, you get a prayer book in your hand, and stand between 2 churchmen, good my lord, for on that ground I'll make a holy descant. And be not easily won to our requests. Play the maid's part. Still answer nay, and take it.
I go. And if you plead as well for them as I can say nay to thee for myself, no doubt we bring it to a happy issue.
Catesby! Stand ready now to speak to them!
Now shut the door! Follow the citizens are come!
Follow me!
Welcome, Lord Mayor. I dance attendance here. I think the Duke will not be spoke with all. Catesby, what says your lord to my request?
He doth entreat, your grace, my noble lord,
to visit him tomorrow or next day. He is within, with two right reverend fathers, divinely bent to meditation. And in no worldly suits would he be moved to draw him from his holy exercise.
Return, good Catesby, to the gracious Duke. Tell him myself, the mayor, and aldermen are come to have some conference with his grace.
I'll signify so much unto him straight.
Ah, my friends, this prince is not an Edward. He is not lulling on a lewd love bed, but on his knees at meditation. Not dallying with a brace of courtesans, but meditating with two deep divines. Happy were England, would this virtuous prince take on his grace the sovereignty thereof. But sure, I fear we will not win him to it.
Oh, Mary, God defend his grace should say us nay.
I fear he will. Here Catesby comes again. Now, Catesby, what says his grace?
He wonders to what end you have assembled such troops of citizens to come to him, his grace not being warned thereof before. He fears, my lord, you mean no good to him.
Oh, no.
Sorry I am, my noble cousin, should suspect that I mean no good to him. By heaven, we come to him in perfect love. So, once more return and tell his grace.
My lord.
When holy and devout religious men are at their beads, 'tis much to draw them hence. So sweet is zealous contemplation.
In the name of Christ and the Holy Spirit, sanctity.
See where his grace stands, tween two clergymen.
Two props of virtue for a Christian prince. To stay him from the fall of vanity. And see, a book of prayer in his hand. True ornaments to know a holy man. Famous Plantagenet, most gracious prince, lend favorable ear to our requests, and pardon us the interruption of thy devotion and right Christian zeal.
My lord, there needs no such apology. I do beseech your grace to pardon me, who earnest in the service of my God defer the visitation of my friends. But leaving this, what is your grace's pleasure?
Even that, I hope, which pleaseth God above and all good men of this ungoverned isle.
I do suspect I have done some offence that seems disgracious in the city's eyes, and that you come to apprehend my ignorance.
You have, my lord. Would it might please your grace on our entreaties to amend your fault.
Else wherefore breathe I in a Christian land?
Know then it is your fault that you resign the supreme seat, the throne majestical, the sceptred office of your ancestors, to the corruption of a blemished stock. While in the mildness of your sleepy thoughts, which here we waken to our country's good, the noble isle doth want his proper limbs, which to recure, we heartily solicit your gracious self to take on you the charge and kingly government of this your land, not as protector, steward, substitute, or lowly factor for another's gain, but as successively from blood to blood, your right of birth, your empery, your own. For this, consorted with the citizens, your very worshipful and loving friends, and by their vehement instigation, in this just cause come I to move your grace.
I cannot tell if to depart in silence, or bitterly to speak in your approof best fitteth my degree or your condition. Your love deserves my thanks, but my desert unmeritable shuns your high request. First, if all obstacles were cut away and that my path were even to the crown, yet so much is my poverty of spirit, so many and so mighty my defects, that I would rather hide me from my greatness than in my greatness covet to be hid, and in the vapor of my glory smothered. But, God be thanked, there is no need of me. The royal tree hath left us royal fruit, which, mellowed by the stealing hours of time, will well become the seat of majesty, and make no doubt us happy by his reign. On him I lay that you would lay on me, the right and fortune of his happy stars, which God defend that I should wring from him.
My lord, this argues conscience in your grace, but the respects thereof are nice and trivial, all circumstances well considered. You say the young prince is your brother's son, so say we too, but not by Edward's wife. More bitterly could I expostulate. Say that for reverence to some alive, I give a sparing limit to my tongue. Then, good my lord, take to your royal self this proffered benefit of dignity, if not to bless us and the land withal, yet to draw forth your noble ancestry from the corruption of abusing times unto a lineal, true derived course.
Oh, do, good my lord. Your citizens entreat you.
Refuse not, mighty lord, this proffered life.
Oh, make them joyful, grant their lawful suit.
Alas, why would you heap this care on me? I am unfit for state and majesty. I do beseech you take it not amiss. I cannot nor I will not yield to you.
If you refuse it, as in love and zeal, loath to depose the child, your brother's son, as well we know your tenderness of heart and gentle, kind, effeminate remorse, which we have noted in you to your kindred, and equally indeed to all estates. Yet no, where you accept our suit or no, your brother's son shall never reign our king, but we will plant some other in the throne to the disgrace and downfall of your house. And in this resolution, here we leave you. Come, citizens.
Zounds! I'll entreat no more.
Oh, do not swear, my lord of Buckingham.
Call him again, sweet prince. Accept their suit. If you deny them, all the land will rue it.
Will you enforce me to a world of cares?
Call them again.
My lord, I am not made of stone, but penetrable to your kind entreaties, albeit against my conscience and my soul. Cousin of Buckingham, and sage grave men, since you will buckle fortune on my back, to bear her burden whether I will or no, I must have patience to endure the load. But if black scandal or foul-faced reproach attend the sequel of your imposition, your mere enforcement shall acquittance me from all the impure blots and stains thereof. For God doth know, and you may partly see how far I am from the desire of this.
God bless your grace. We see it and we'll say it.
In saying so, you shall but say the truth.
Then I salute you with this royal title. Long live King Richard, England's worthy king.
Amen.
Tomorrow, may it please you to be crowned?
Even when you please, for you will have it so.
Tomorrow, then, we will attend your grace. And so, most joyfully, we take our leave.
Come, let us to our holy work again. Farewell, my cousin. Farewell, gentlemen.
Your Grace is both a happy and a joyful time of day.
As much to you, good Anne. Whither away?
No farther than the tower. And as I guess, upon the like devotion as yourselves to gratulate the gentle princes there.
Kind sister, thanks. We'll enter all together. And in good time here the lieutenant comes. Master Brackenbury, pray you, by your leave, how doth the prince and my young son of York?
Right well, dear madam. By your patience, I may not suffer you to visit them.
What? Oh?
The king hath strictly charged the contrary.
The king? Who's that?
I mean the Lord Protector.
The Lord protect him from that kingly title. Hath he set bounds between their love and me? I am their mother. Who shall bar me from them?
I am their father's mother. I will see them.
Their aunt I am in law, in love their mother. Then bring me to their sights. I'll bear thy blame and take thy office from thee on my peril.
No, madam, no. I may not leave it so. I am bound by oath and therefore pardon me.
Oh, me. My babes.
I fear what this imports.
Madam.
Here comes the good Lord Derby in post-haste.
Let me but meet you ladies 1 hour hence, and I'll salute your Grace of York as mother and reverend looker-on of two fair queens.
Oh,
come, Lady Anne. You must straight to Westminster, there to be crowned Richard's royal queen.
Despiteful tidings.
Oh, unpleasing news.
Oh, cut my lace asunder that my pent heart may have some scope to beat, or else I swoon with this dead killing news. Oh,
be of good cheer. For mother, how fares your grace?
Oh, Dorset, speak not to me. Get thee gone. Death and destruction dogs thee at thy heels. If thou wilt outstrip death, go cross the seas and live with Richmond, noble Derby's son. Go, hie thee from this slaughterhouse, lest thou increase the number of the dead and make me die the slave of Margaret's curse, nor mother, wife, nor England's counted queen.
Full of wise care is this your counsel, madam. Take all the swift advantage of the hours. You shall have letters from me to my son.
Oh, ill-dispersing wind of misery. Oh, my accursed womb! The bed of death, a cockatrice, hast thou hatched to the world, whose unavoided eye is murderous.
Come, madam, come. I in all haste was sent.
And I with all unwillingness will go. Oh, would to God that the inclusive verge of golden metal that must round my brow were red-hot steel to sear me to the brains. Anointed, let me be with deadly venom and die ere men can say, God save the Queen.
Go. Go, poor soul. I envy not thy glory. To feed my humor, wish thyself no harm.
No. Why, when he that is my husband now came to me as I followed Henry's course, within so small a time, my woman's heart grossly grew captive to his honey words, which hitherto hath held mine eyes from rest. For never yet 1 hour in his bed did I enjoy the golden dew of sleep, but with his timorous dreams was still awaked. Besides, he hates me for my father, Warwick, and will no doubt shortly be rid of me.
Dorset, to Richmond, and good fortune guide thee.
Mother.
And now to Richard, and good angels tend thee. Go thou to sanctuary, and good thoughts possess thee. I to my grave, where peace and rest lie with me. 80-odd years of sorrow have I seen.
Stay. Yet look back with me unto the tower. Pity, you ancient stones, those tender babes whom envy hath immured within your walls. Rough cradle for such little pretty ones.
Oh.
Rude, ragged nurse. Old sullen playfellow for tender princes. Use my babies well. Thus foolish sorrow bids your stones. Farewell.
Cousin of Buckingham, thus high by thy advice and thy assistance is King Richard seated. But shall we wear these glories for a day, or shall they last and we rejoice in them?
Still live they, and forever let them last.
Ah, Buckingham, now do I play the touch to try if thou be current gold indeed. Young Edward lives. Think now what I would speak.
Say on, my loving lord.
Why, Buckingham, I say I would be king.
Why, so you are, my thrice-renowned lord.
Ah, am I king? 'Tis so, but Edward lives.
True, noble prince.
Oh, bitter consequence that Edward still should live. True, noble prince. Cousin, thou wast not wont to be so dull. Shall I be plain? I wish the bastard's dead, and I would have it suddenly performed. What sayest thou now? Speak suddenly, be brief.
Your grace may do your pleasure.
Tut, tut, thou art all ice, thy kindness freezes.
Say, have I thy consent that they shall die?
Give me some little breath. Some pause, dear lord, before I positively speak in this. I will resolve you herein presently.
High-reaching Buckingham grows circumspect. Catesby.
My lord.
Knowest thou not any whom corrupting gold will tempt unto a close exploit of death?
I know a discontented gentleman whose humble means match not his haughty spirit. Gold were as good as 20 orators, and will no doubt tempt him to anything.
And what is his name?
His name, my lord, is Tyrrell.
I partly know the man. Go call him hither. The deep, revolving, witty Buckingham no more shall be the neighbour to my counsels. Hath he so long held out with me untired, and stops he now for breath? Well, be it so. Come hither, Ratcliffe. Rumour it abroad that Anne, my wife, is very grievous sick. I will take order for her keeping close. Inquire me out some mean, poor gentleman whom I will marry straight to Clarence's daughter. The boy is foolish, and I fear not him. Look how thou dreamst! I say again, give out that Anne, my queen, is sick and like to die about it. For it stands me much upon to stop all hopes whose growth may damage me. I must be married to my brother's daughter, or else my kingdom stands on brittle glass. Murder her brothers and then marry her. Uncertain way of gain, but I am in so far in blood that sin will pluck on sin. Tear falling pity dwells not in this eye.
The man is here, sire.
Is thy name Tyrrell?
James Tyrrell, and your most obedient subject.
Art thou indeed?
Well, prove me, my gracious lord.
Dost thou resolve to kill a friend of mine?
Please you, but I had rather kill two enemies.
Why, there thou hast it. Two deep enemies, foes to my rest and my sweet sleep's disturbers, are they that I would have thee deal upon, Tyrrell. I mean those bastards in the tower.
Now let me have open means to come to them, and soon I'll rid you from the fear of them.
Oh, thou singst sweet music. Hark, come hither, Tyrrell. Go, by this token. Rise and lend thine ear. There is no moment, so say it is done, and I will love thee and prefer thee for it.
I will dispatch it straight. My lord?
My lord, I have considered in my mind the late request that you did sign me in.
Well, let that rest. Dorset is fled to Richmond.
I hear the news, my lord.
Darby is your wife's son. Well, look unto it.
My lord, sir. I claim the gift, my due by promise, from which your honour and your faith is pawned. The earldom of Hereford and the movables which you have promised, I shall possess.
Darby, look to your wife. If she convey letters to Richmond, you shall answer it.
What says your highness to my just request?
I do remember me. Henry the VI did prophesy that Richmond should be king when Richmond was a little peevish boy, a king, perhaps.
My lord.
How come the prophet could not at that time have told me, I being by, that I should kill him?
My lord, your promise for the earldom?
Aye. What's the clock?
I am thus bold to put your grace in mind of what you promised me.
Well, but what's the clock?
Upon the stroke of 10?
Well, let it strike.
Why let it strike?
Because that like a jack thou keep'st the stroke betwixt thy begging and my meditation. I am not in the giving vein today.
May it please you to resolve me in my suit.
Thou troublest me. I am not in the vein.
And is it thus? Repays he my deep service with such contempt? Need I him king for this? Oh, let me think on Hastings and be gone to Brecknock while my fearful head is on.
Tyrannous and bloody act is done. The most arch deed, a piteous massacre that ever yet this land was guilty of. Dighton and Forrest, who I did suborn to do this piece of ruthful butchery, albeit they were fleshed villains, bloody dogs, melted with tenderness and mild compassion, wept like to children in their death's sad story. Oh, thus, quoth Dighton, lay the gentle babes. Thus, quoth Forrest, girdling one another within their alabaster innocent arms, Their lips were four red roses on a stalk, and in their summer beauty kissed each other. A book of prayer on their pillow lay, which once, quoth Forrest, almost changed my mind, but oh, the devil. There the villain stopped. When Dighton thus told on, we smother it, the most replenished sweet work of nature that from the prime creation e'er she framed. Hence both are gone with conscience and remorse, they could not speak. And so I left them both to bear this tidings to the bloody king.
In episode 22 of Vivat Rex, the cast was as follows. The storyteller, Richard Burton. Edward IV, Ian Ogilvy. Edward V, Elizabeth Lindsay. Richard III, Norman Rodway. Buckingham, Derek Godfrey. Queen Elizabeth, Susan Engle. Radcliffe, Michael Tudor Barnes. Rivers, Walter Hall. Hastings, Christopher Benjamin. Duchess of York, Gwen Franken Davis. Archbishop of York, Godfrey Kenton. Richard, Duke of York, Judy Bennett. Mayor and a messenger, Geoffrey Siegel. Catesby, Kerry Francis. Grey, Peter Craze. Dorset, Paul Meyer. Bishop of Ely, James Thomason. Derby, Colin Douglas. Lady Anne, Jane Knowles. Brackenbury, Bruce Beebe. And James Tyrrell, Rod Beecham. Music composed by Christopher Whelan. Produced and directed by Martin Jenkins. And tomorrow our chronicle continues with more